welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8:01 a.m. and temperature outside is 19 degrees. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. It's a nice morning today.
Yeah, it is very nice out. It's been kind of nice all, like, yesterday was good, too. I actually, last night I went canoeing with my brother who wanted to test out his boat for a trip he's going on this week, so...
Oh.
Yeah, that was really nice. We went to BDI and, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I am just in the middle of trying to figure out where I am today. I better get my glasses on because I have a guest that I'm going to introduce shortly. And, so I'm just... getting the right date here. It's today is June the 27th, is it?
It's the 25th, actually.
The 25th, okay.
Or actually, no, never mind. It's 27th.
Is it 25th? Okay. Well, anyway, I am seemingly yes. Here I am. Okay, and I will be just going through what we're planning on today, and I'm just having a hard time to find all my material here. So this morning we have a guest. He has been on our show a number of years ago. His name is Jan Flohr. I'll be introducing him shortly. And then after that, there's other topics of discussion that I would like to cover. And one of them is something that came up very recently, and it's about the 5G meters that the city is planning to install in our back lanes. And there's a lot of concern about these meters, and it hasn't been... the people have not been notified. So after the program, after Wind Spoons, I'm going to be heading off to City Hall to join a meeting organized by Mark Friesen. Anyway, having said this, I would like to introduce our guest. I don't know if he's here right now. Can you tell if he's on air?
He's on the call, yeah.
Oh, good. Sometimes we can see them and sometimes not. So our guest this morning is Jan Flohr, and he's a farmer who specializes in raising chickens as well as goats. Some time ago, Jan purchased some land in Gimli, Manitoba from Darcy Adams and his wife, who were raising chickens in a holistic way and selling eggs to the community, as well as making regular deliveries to Winnipeg at a convenient location in the Wolseley area near the Robert Steen Community Centre. People would place their orders and pick up the eggs as well as returning the cartons. Darcy, however, was an American, and although he and his wife were raising a family in the Gimli area, they decided to return to the United States, where he had some land in New York where they could establish their business. So Darcy and his wife assured me and others that they would be very particular about whom they sold their farm to, because they wanted the new owner to maintain the values they stood for. And that is how Jan Flohr came to take over the business in Gimli, and the rest is history. So today we'll be talking to Jan about his business and the direction he is taking. Welcome to Wooden Spoons, Jan.
Thanks for having me, Mary Jane.
Okay, so I'm glad that you're here. And maybe we could start off by you telling us what you did for a living before purchasing the farm in Gimli, And why did you decide to follow the footsteps and values from the people who sold you the farm? So, and when exactly did all this come about?
Well, it was about coming up on 3 years ago. And I used to work in the film industry in the set decoration department. And I did that in Vancouver for just about a decade before I moved out to Winnipeg. And I just felt that the film industry was going in a direction that didn't, that I didn't want to fit in it anymore. So I'd kind of had a dream to have a farm for a long time. And the original plan for moving out to the farm was to start a gourmet mushroom farm.
Oh.
But life kind of has a way of changing things and giving you a different direction. So I ended up doing chickens for the first... I really was invested in the chickens for the first year or so. And I've also been trying to get a little market garden started, and I fell into raising goats, and I absolutely love the goats now and got a lot of plans for them as well.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, that's quite a change in your career for sure. And goats, goats are interesting characters. I think they can be awfully troublesome if they want to be for some people. I think they climb on top of roofs and all sorts of things, right?
Oh yeah, I've found them in a number of different places. I came up to my truck one day, and one of my goats was in my truck. if their food supply isn't quite up to what they want, even if they have food and they want something else, they will find a way to get out. So,
they
are a lot of work, but it's very rewarding as well. So.
And I think goats are very friendly.
Yeah, they can be. With goats, you almost have to be with them from when they're young all the way up until they're an adult for them to be friendly, because they're one of the few animals that will go feral very quickly.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a natural instinct in them from their ancestry.
Yeah, they have a natural instinct to want to run away.
Oh, my goodness. So why did you make this very radical change, and how did you learn about the holistic way of raising chickens? I mean, you didn't have any experience in that, did you?
I grew up on a small farm when I was a kid, but I really didn't have much part in that. The chickens, I literally got a two-hour run-through with the previous owners on how to keep them alive and keep them healthy and all that. And the internet is abundant. It has a lot of resources in it. So that's kind of how I started. And a lot of it was just overconfidence and I can do this. So
okay. You just dived into it. And so did you take over the chicken? Like, you took over the chicken farm. Taking over their chickens that they had.
Yeah, I took over all their chickens that they had, and like in the first year, I had to learn how to hatch out a new batch of chickens, find feed, clean the chicken barn, which is not my favorite task, but it must be done. And I last year I finally put in some containment for the chickens, because for the first 2 years they when I let them out in the morning, they literally could go anywhere on the 120 acres I'm on.
Oh, my goodness.
Which wasn't the best for predators and stuff. So I lost a few to coyotes, and now they have a really big yard that's too big for them anyways. But they can go anywhere there and enjoy life. So.
Oh, that's nice, because you do the predators. That is another issue with when you're raising hens. I think predators are there are many different types of predators that would be would want to take a chicken. Do you want to comment on that? What they would be?
Yeah, so pretty much where I am, we have everything. So we've got coyotes, we've got foxes, we've got wolves. There's black bears. There's been reports of mountain lions. We've got lynxes.
What else is there? Oh my gosh!
Yeah. One thing that I didn't know that would be a problem, and something that Adam told me when he left, is because I asked what's the biggest predator problem, is ravens. Mm. Ravens are actually a problem with them. So,
I guess ravens would steal the eggs, right?
No, they will take a full chicken if they have the opportunity. They've been known to kill them. So,
well, in Winnipeg and in the Wolseley where I live, we have a lot of ravens. I don't know why we don't have other birds. We don't see any robins anymore. There's a lot of sparrows and ravens and crows. The ravens, the crows aren't as bad, like, in terms of being predators, but the ravens, and they have the most amazing squawking call.
You have
to identify. You can't help but know it's a raven when you hear it. But I know, one day I saw a raven, it was by the school, and it had a bird in its mouth. So it's kind of chilling, but, that's the way it is. And there are rabbits around, too. So I guess those would be possible targets for ravens if they could get them.
Yeah. It's funny because, I was told that they'd be a problem, and I really haven't had an issue with them. And I think part of that is because my first dog that I got when I moved out there, anytime I saw a raven or a crow or something, I'd pretend to bark at it. So I taught him to bark at just about anything in the sky. So now that's his job. He's kind of like my anti-raven.
that you have a dog then?
Yeah. I have two dogs. So one is he's a rescue from up north, but he knows how to bark at ravens. So he's doing that. Mm-hmm. And then I in the second year I picked up a Caucasian Shepherd Kangal cross from a lovely lady out in the Interlake who has them. And he's more for coyote defense and bigger animal defense. So,
well, that's that's obviously you are an animal lover.
I do love the animals. So,
John, do you have any comment about all this?
Yeah, I just have a question about how do you do regenerative agriculture with the goats?
So with the goats, one way you can do regenerative agriculture is, I guess a little bit of background on that is that a lot of current farming practices kind of strip mine the carbon out of the soil, and one way you can start putting that carbon back into the soil is by doing small grazing areas, and you intensively graze it. So you'll put the animals into, instead of having them out on 120 acres free ranging, you put them into 1 acre and you have them there for 1 day. And you put them in and you move them a lot. And it kind of mimics the way the bison were on the prairies. And that's how we got, these huge and deep topsoil layers. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the goats. And it's slowly getting there. I have the Interlake Watershed District has been incredibly supportive. And they're an organization that helps farmers and other people with land out in the area that I am. And we're trying to bring in a system that's a solar GPS collar for the goats. And with that, it would take away the need for fencing, in-ground fencing. So I'll be able to literally go on my phone, draw a pasture, bring the goats out there and turn their collars on, and then they stay in that area. They can graze it, and I can move them, and it's it has a lot of promise. So
this thing actually senses the barriers, like where they can't cross, and if they try to cross, it'll affect them.
Yeah, so it's you have to train the animals. with these collars, but once they kind of have an idea on how it works, they generally stay in that area. You're always going to have breakouts and, you know, the ones that are stubborn and don't want to do it, but the idea is sound, so.
Okay. Did you have any more questions?
I think that's everything. Okay.
Yeah. So when you, it was quite remarkable, actually, when you took over from Darcy's farm, is that the business continued as usual. Your deliveries were made on a monthly basis as they were before.
Yeah.
And it was a smooth transition for the customers in Winnipeg, and I assume for those in Gimli as well. So do you want to comment on that relationship?
You know, it was fairly, how do I say it? It was pretty smooth. The previous owners made it pretty easy for me to just kind of slip in and take over. And then I added in, you know, using Google to, you know, make a form so that I didn't have to track everything by paper. And they were a family dealing with everything. And then it's just me, a single person out there. So I had to make it a little bit more efficient for myself to make it smooth. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe you could just maybe expand a little bit about this, some of the things you need to be aware of. And we're talking about the predators and foxes and hawks and possibly wolves. And I know that,
yeah.
I grew up in the Interlake region, and wolves, at night, you would hear the coyotes all the time. You would never know that they were around during the day, but they were definitely there. And they would come into the yard. They'd be very close. So it was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you would never know that they were there during the day. You'd never see one.
Yeah, my area, we generally don't see wolves, like, right where I am. I think the coyotes have kind of established themselves as they own this area kind of thing. And there's a healthy coyote population. And the first year that I was there, before I got my second dog, I had coyotes coming right into the yard, so like right in where the chickens were, and I lost a number of chickens that year. And when I got my second dog, I haven't seen a coyote since. So,
okay, that's a very
they patrol and they, you know, they pee on things, they mark their territory.
Yes.
And last fall I was working out on getting some grain in for the chickens. And I had a coyote on my back fence or the back forest line, and I pointed that out to the dogs, and they took off for a good 20 minutes, and one of them came back without a collar, and I haven't seen a coyote since, so.
Oh, gee. Well, those are, I think, very important things to be aware of, the wolves and the coyotes.
Yeah.
And they do, wolves, we don't see them too much, and thank goodness for that, because they're larger animals and much more predatory, much more dangerous. So
The reason I kind of contained the chickens a little bit more was because I don't mind the coyotes being there. I don't mind them in the forest. I don't mind them in the fields, as long as they're not bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why I want to go to the, essentially, the no fences in the ground for my regenerative grazing, is I want the animals to be able to still come and go. It's just, you know, don't interfere with what I'm doing so much, so...
Yes. What about hawks or these predatory birds? Eagles, for instance? I think they're very predatory when it comes to
You know, I've seen lots of eagles over my property. I've seen lots of hawks over the property. And I've seen, you know, the turkey vultures and...
Wow.
They really don't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned before, but my one dog, anything in the sky, he kind of barks at. But, they kind of leave me alone. There's lots of snakes out there. There's lots of rabbits. and other small animals that is their natural prey that they probably go after instead of the chickens. So,
yeah, I know in Winnipeg, in our area, there are rabbits. I don't know how they survive, and it worries me because, you know, there's a lot of things that would be looking for rabbits, too. But there yeah. are rabbits, and I'm kind of surprised to see them.
Yeah, well, we have a number, I think there's a couple species of indigenous rabbit or hare species out here. So, yeah, they know how to live out there, and I mean, they're pretty quick, so some of them get away, some of them don't, and that's just kind of the cycle it is. So.
Yeah, yeah, so that's the world of the nature. I want to comment on the fact that I went to Europe, that was a number of years ago, with my son and his wife, and we went to the Netherlands, yeah. and we were renting a suite when we were there, and then we would go to get some groceries nearby, and I was going to be picking up eggs, and I couldn't find any eggs anywhere, and I couldn't figure out, they were not in the refrigerator, and then later I noticed the eggs were all piled up on the floor in the store, and then also outside the stores, there were eggs piled up by the windows, even in the hot sun, so...
Yeah.
This was very surprising to me. The eggs had very yellow yolks, very orange yolks, and they were totally good. They weren't at all spoiled. And so you would never do this with store-bought eggs, I don't think. I don't think they would keep that well. So it was like in the country, too, when we had eggs, we never really stored them in the refrigerator, and they never got bad, never spoiled. So do you want to comment on how eggs
yeah.
can be kept fresh without refrigeration?
Yeah, so that comes down to kind of a protective layer that the chickens put on their eggs naturally, and it's called the bloom. And sometimes, like, when you get a farm fresh eggs, you'll pick them up and you'll, because the eggs can be a number of different colors, if you get a little bit of moisture on the egg, you'll rub it, and it's kind of like a powdery, looks like a powdery layer, and it's essentially a protective layer that keeps the egg from having bacteria get into it. And commercial egg farming puts all their eggs through a cleaning process, and that removes that bloom, and that bloom is what lets the egg stay out on the counter if you wanted to do that. So.
Mm-hmm. So basically, the eggs are the natural eggs are not washed, and they're just
correct.
Might be wiped off, I guess, but not washed.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then that's how they're protected. So that's I guess this is the natural protection for eggs.
They kind of put it in for themselves because I guess they need that if they're going to be hatching their eggs. They can't have it. They can't put their eggs in the refrigerator, so they got to sit on them, right? So.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing about eggs, and I noticed that the eggs that the chickens, when they are grass-fed, the eggs are very bright orange in color, very deep color. But now yeah. I notice that all the store-bought eggs also have the dark orange color. So what do you think about that?
That's one thing I don't fully understand because, like, even with my eggs, I've gotten some that are just absolutely vibrantly orange, and then you get once in a while you get an egg that looks like what the store box eggs used to look like, where they were just fairly pale.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I wonder if it has to do with exercise or if it has to do with their nutrition or what it really is. I'm not exactly sure myself.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I suspect that when you see these store-bought eggs and they have a bright orange, I don't think the store-bought eggs are from chickens that are running loose. I think that they're factory farm chickens. Like, those are the ones
yeah.
that sell. So, and I think they must be putting something into the egg, like into the feed to cause the color. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. That's actually probably something I can't exactly comment on because the way I raise my chickens is very different.
Like in the wintertime, the chickens, they'll probably have paler eggs. But when you put them out in the spring, when they're out in the fields and that, they'll have orange-colored yolks, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, sunlight definitely does affect the chickens. It will affect their laying as well. And the chickens like light, so mm-hmm. light makes them happy. So you try and give them as much light in the winter as you can. Like, I have, because they generally don't want to go outside in the winter.
No, it's too cold. They can't take the cold.
Yeah, I put, like, a sunlight in there for them and give them as much windows as I can, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I know that I learned from you that you had a rough time in the last little while when I just saw you a few weeks ago, that your house burned down, but you were not in the house at the time. So do you want to tell us about that and how it affected everything on your farm? And I understood that chickens were traumatized by that too.
Yeah, it was in early March, and I was just going into having all my goats, and my one sheep was having its babies. And I was out in the barn late because the sheep was giving birth, and I came out of the barn, and I saw a little bit of a glow at the side of my house, and I could hear my fire alarms going off, and I had a house fire, so... they're pretty sure it started from the dryer, so that's something to everybody should be aware of. Is check your dryers and make sure they're not defective.
Because of the lint that builds up in the dryer can catch on fire.
Yeah, the lint can do that. There's a number of things that can cause a dryer fire. It could be electrical. It could be mechanical. It could be the lint. It could be the fact that you're washing work clothes that have had oils or something that's combustible on it, mm-hmm. because our washing machines don't actually wash them all that well. So you're supposed to wash those kind of clothes at least twice in the washing machine before you put them into dryer, where they can spontaneously combust.
Uh-huh.
The chickens. It kind of felt like they were affected by it because I lost water and I was having to haul water for 2 months for all the animals.
Why did you have to do that?
Stopped laying. Oh, what's that?
What, you said you have to haul water because of the fire?
Yeah, I had a big ICB, I think, what's it called, an ICB tote that I'd have to go to the neighbors. I'd fill it up, and then I'd fill up the goat water. I'd fill up the chicken water. The dogs got their water. I did that for a good 2 months. So.
Well, yeah. That was, and the chickens were very traumatized. You said they stopped laying eggs, did they? Or
yeah, they pretty much stopped laying eggs for at least a good month. I don't know if they picked up on the fact that things had changed a little, or if it was just the time of year that they were molting and they just don't lay at that period. Mm-hmm. I don't know what exactly it was, but it felt pretty coincidental, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's you've gone through some very rough times, and now I understand that you're rebuilding the house that you lived in before. That's being rebuilt now.
Yeah, I'm hoping to rebuild soon. I have a little trailer that I'm living in the moment, so it's probably not the best for long term, but it works for now, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just you got to keep going on.
Yeah, well, you certainly have been very, you've endured these things, and you've been very adaptable to a lot of situations, and you understand your animals and you treat them well. And that's very important, and your customers are very grateful for the wonderful quality of the eggs that you provide for them. So. You do come into Winnipeg on a regular basis. Do you want to comment on that? And you deliver eggs to those that that ask for them?
Yeah, I know my egg production is kind of, I've slowed it down since I took over the farm. So I'm not producing quite as many, so I'm not doing as much of a delivery. But it's a good kind of, I guess, schedule for myself to come in once a month and bring in eggs, and yeah.
And so you have this plan to do that? So how do people, if they want to buy eggs from you, do they have to call you, or how does this work?
Yeah, usually it's kind of just a word of mouth kind of thing, and if one person wants eggs and I have them, I'm happy to deliver them. Right now, I've got the, after the fire and everything, I've kind of tried to keep things a little bit slower just because my energy isn't. I'm probably down to about 75 chickens from about 300 chickens.
Oh my goodness!
When I first started,
yes.
So, the process of renewing the chicken stock is a little bit on hold for a little while. So,
yes.
As much as I would like to be taking on more customers, it's not quite feasible at the moment. So.
Okay, so maybe at a later date you'll be more in fuller operation.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that I'm kind of trying to work on this year is kind of the market garden that I have going on, and I'm planning on doing a bit of a pay what you can kind of style, where I have a stand at the end of the driveway.
Okay.
And I'll put what I have available out with a suggested price, and people can pay that, or if they feel they can pay more, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then if someone says I can't pay, they can kind of take that as well. So.
Okay. Well, we hope you wish you all the best in all those endeavors, and we certainly appreciate any deliveries you make in the Wolseley. I know one of our radio programmers here, Rico John, is very interested in. I used to always get extra eggs, so I would bring them for other people.
Wonderful! I will always bring them if I have them. So.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind, and thank you so much, Jan, for joining us this morning. It's very nice talking to you and learning about the whole process of raising animals, and it's a full time job for sure.
Yeah, and, well, thanks for having me as well.
Do you happen to have any song that you would like to suggest? I don't think I even came up with one myself, unless John comes up with one.
Oh, I have no idea. Legends Never Die by Orville Peck.
Oh.
It's always a good one.
Okay, we'll see if I can come up with that one. John is an expert at finding things. Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Summertime, y'all. Is it hot enough for you yet? Well, stick around, because tonight's gonna be hotter than a firecracker on the 4th of July. How about that, Orville, by the way? That boy's got talent with a capital T. I wonder what that old boy's doing tonight to beat the heat.
Legends never die. sure gonna feel the way I feel. Another blow ain't gonna stop me. Wait and see. You got nothing if you ain't got pride. So honey, take the wheel.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Wooden Spoons with John Dick and Mary Jane Eason.
Okay. I want to make some announcements today that it's old news, but it's also new news. I got a call from Mark Friesen, I believe it was last night, and she's going to City Hall today because there's going to be there's something going on in City Hall with the 5G meters being set up. And now apparently the public hasn't heard about it. Mark Friesen had they had been assured that the public would be informed when there would be an announcement or a meeting to discuss this, and apparently there was none. And all of a sudden, they're going to be installing 5G these meters in our backyards. Now, a lot of people in Winnipeg do not know about 5G. In 1920, this goes back quite a while ago, Mark Friesen was, I hear some background noise, I'm not sure if it's here, there's strange things going on here, but anyway, it was in January 2020 that she started her educational series about the 5G appeal. And this, I have these little cards, and it states, scientists and doctors call for a moratorium on the rollout of 5G. 5G will substantially increase exposure to radioactive frequency and electromagnetic radiation. Oh, there's that noise that was happening here.
Yeah, I think it's the pipes or something. I don't know. I didn't see anything when I went out.
I've been hearing this noise, and I didn't know where it was coming from. So I'm going to start over again. So scientists and doctors call for a moratorium on the rollout of 5G. 5G will substantially increase exposure to radioactive frequency, electromagnetic fields, and it's in RE-EMF for short, that have been proven to be harmful for humans and the environment. And this statement was made by the International EMF Scientist Appeal. So 5G generation technology not just an upgrade for cell phones and other wireless devices to carry more data at faster speeds, but also more electrosmog, biologically active radio frequency radiation emissions from so-called small cell antennas close to our homes and schools and more cell towers. So there were some of the effects of 5G have been reported to be headaches, brain fog, tinnitus, heart problems, fatigue, sleep disruptions, sperm damage, neurological illnesses, DNA breaks, cancer. So there have been this is not made up, this is substantiated, and the city of Winnipeg has decided to go forward with the installation. They've been always wanting to do it, and there's always been a protest about it, but now it's taken on a new dimension where they're not following their own rules of letting the public know. So after this radio program, I'm off to City Hall because they're having a meeting at 9:30 a.m., and I'm going to, you know, go to that meeting and see if there are any presentations. I know Mark Friesen will be there and other people that are concerned about the installation of 5G. The other things that I happen to know about 5G is we used to have a lot of meetings in the past. We had meetings at Mimi Park Ridge when there was no room at the school. We had meetings in public places at the Maryland on Westminster. They have a room there, the housing co-op. We've had meetings all over the place, and Marg was spearheading these meetings and providing information. During that time, I learned a lot about how it affects the bees, for instance. The bees and insects, the pollinating insects, they have an exoskeleton that is penetrated by the 5G radio waves, but they cannot get rid of the heat, so basically they cook to death. So 5G radiation kills insects, it kills the pollinators. What are we going to do without the pollinators, may I ask? We depend on pollinators for pollinating our plants and so on. And I know there's a lot less pollinators in the city than there were before, and I'm not sure why that has happened. Must be some environmental issue there. But there are a few bumblebees, and I'm seeing a little bit more of them, but probably pesticides and so on that are being used, or people spraying their yards to kill dandelions or whatever they're doing, which is dandelions, of course, are wonderful plants that have tap roots that go very, very deep into the soil and bring up nutrients. So we should not vilify dandelions. They're beautiful, they're healthy, they actually provide food for the bumblebees in early spring when there's no other type of flower available. Dandelion roots are very important. I go to the farmers markets, and which are now happening in the Wolseley, and there's a lady there that's selling dandelion roots that are dried for medicinal purposes, or dandelion leaves. You can cook the dandelion leaves as well. They make a nourishing green, and of course the roots can be made dried and made into coffee, dandelion coffee, or you can do whatever you want with them. Look, maybe there's places you can look up and investigate the uses for dandelion roots and the benefits to your health. I know my mother, a long time ago, she used to grind up dandelion roots to make coffee. In those days, there was a time when they couldn't afford coffee, and so that's what she did. So anyway, those are important plants. We should appreciate all the gifts of nature. They're all part of creation, and we are not the what do you call it, the rulers of creation, we have to learn that we are in interrelationship with creation. So whatever we do to harm nature, we are really harming ourselves in the long term. So that's my spiel for this morning. And I have a few more bits of information to share. One of them is maybe I'll talk about peat mining, and that's another thing that's aroused my interest. When I'm looking for soil, and when I see the label Miracle Grow, well, I was buying some of that for my plants, but I was trying to see what it contained, and they had a sign like content was peat, and that raised the red flag for me. So I'm just going to explain the importance of peatlands and what it is. So peatlands are terrestrial wetland ecosystems in which waterlogged conditions prevent plant material from fully decomposing. Consequently, the production of organic matter exceeds its decomposition, which results in a net accumulation of peat. In cool climates, peatland vegetation is mostly made up of sphagnum mosses, sedges, and shrubs, and are the primary builder of peat, whereas in warmer climates, graminoids, and I don't know what that is, and woody vegetation provide most of the organic matter. I know in the town, in the area of Fisher Branch, where I grew up in the Interlake area, there was a lot of peatland, and a lot of it got churned up, plowed, and it was destroyed. I also recall that the peat caught on fire. And I remember one summer when all we had was smoke through the whole area. The land was on fire. I don't know how that happened, but the peat caught on fire, and it was a slow burn, and there was just nothing but smoke in the whole area for the whole summer. So it's an interesting phenomenon. So peatlands occur in every climatic zone and continent and cover 4.23 million kilometers, which corresponds to 2.84% of the Earth's terrestrial surface. Peatlands include landscapes that are still actively accumulating peat, and they're also called mires. Others that are no longer accumulating and do not support the principal peat-forming plants. And such as peatland. Peatlands are used for economic uses such as agriculture, forestry, and excavation for energy and heat generation, horticulture, and other uses. So this seems like a large amount of uses here. About 84% of the world's peatlands are considered to be in natural or near natural state. Drained peatlands make about 16% of the world's peatlands. And due to the process of peat accumulation, peatlands are carbon-rich ecosystems that store and sequester more carbon than any other type of terrestrial ecosystem, in exceeding thereby even the global above-ground carbon stock of forest ecosystems. When peatlands are drained, the carbon from the organic matter contained in peat dries and oxidizes gradually to carbon to CO2 and is permanently lost to the system. Over time, this process also results in soil compaction and subsidence, making it difficult to restore proper hydrology without water table management. Most of the peatlands occur in boreal and temperate parts of the Northern Hemisphere, especially in Europe, North America, and Russia, where they have formed under high precipitation, low temperature climatic regimes. I also had some other information that I had dug up before, and about peat mining. It is a very destructive industry. It disrupts the water tables and removing natural water filtration and releasing vast stores of carbon when you start doing peat mining. Bogs are essential for climate change mitigation. Peat takes centuries to produce for even 1 inch, so unlike forests, peat bogs cannot be restored. So when you think of 1 inch taking centuries, this is how precious this peat is. And this is why I was really upset when I saw peat on the label of the soil that I happened to buy. I won't buy again. I thought it had been banned. I thought peat mining had been banned, but I think there have been exceptions made. In 2011, the Manitoba government passed called Save the Lake Winnipeg Act, which put a moratorium on all new quarry releases. This is the term used, category that peat falls under. So they've had a moratorium on peat mining for getting permits for peat in Manitoba. This act is a clear indication that peat mines are a danger to clean water in Manitoba. The glitch is that the act does not contain provision for existing quarry releases. And this was going back quite in 2011 that I got this information. And at that time, the Green Party leader, James Bedome, now the Green Party leader is Janine Gibson, the Wilderness Committee campaign director, Eric Greter, they all spoke out against the NDP for allowing the peat mining in provincial parks. And they spoke out at the ledge. So that's the information I wanted to share about peat. Try to avoid buying peat when you're shopping for plant material for soil, because peat is a very precious resource. It cannot be renewed. 2,000 years for 1 inch, that's pretty slow renewal rate. And it also sequesters carbon dioxide, and so it doesn't go into the atmosphere. So it mitigates climate change. Very important thing. And the other aspect of peat is that it supports the sphagnum moss, and there are a lot of animals that depend. I remember reading that elk and deer, they require this type of food. And when you take away the peat, you're taking away their food. And that is not right. So that's, I think we have, I think I'm going to move on to having a recipe. We'll end with a recipe. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Mary Jane Eason with John Dick as co-host, and we had Jan Flora as our guest this morning. Here, I just have a bit of a note here about dandelions. You wash the roots, allow them to dry, store in glass containers to use to make a nourishing tea. And they are helpful for urinary tract infections. And it's a great tonic for health and contains many minerals to be found in the root of the dandelion. And I'm going to be because I can do it myself, but I am going to be purchasing some dandelion, dried dandelion roots and leaves from one of the people in the
Farmer's Market.
Farmer's Market, yes. Okay, we have time for a recipe. It's the Ethiopian lentil bowl. It provides 8 servings. So here we go for 2 cups of dried red lentils, sorted and rinsed. And you cover in water and soak for 30 minutes, and then you drain. The red lentils are small, and you'll always see them. They have this kind of orange color. They're not the same as beans. You need 2 large onions chopped and 1 clove of garlic peeled and finely chopped. So you saute all this in a soup pot with some oil until golden. So you saute the lentils with the onions and the garlic. And then you add 3 tablespoons of tomato paste, 1/2 teaspoon of paprika, 1 teaspoon of salt or to taste, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper, and 3 cups of water. Mix the tomato paste and paprika, then add the remaining seasonings, the salt, the ginger, and the pepper. Then you add 1.5 cups of water, and you stir well, and then add the remaining 1.5 cups of water, and again stir well. Cover and bring to a boil. When the water boils, add the lentils, and lower the heat and cook until lentils have softened. Adjust seasonings to taste. So basically, I think you have to mix this mixture first, add the water, and then you add the lentils that you had sautéed, and you mix them all together. And then you can add a bit of 1/4 of a lemon or lime juice. So this is from the Ethiopian fruit bowl, fruit lentil bowl, and I don't have the source of it, but I can provide it next Friday. So you've been listening to Wooden Spoons, and I think we are reaching the end of our program this morning. Thank you for listening. I want to thank Jan for joining us, and John for being our co-host this morning.
Yeah, anytime. You've been listening to CKUW 95.9 FM on Wooden Spoons, sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School. For our podcast, please go to CKUW.ca, type Wooden Spoons in the search bar, and the program will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Easton saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.
Get your day's work done.
Man, I never get no day's work done. I don't do nothing but sleep in that good old